TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
10-5, touchdown!
All the time. A division of Bell Media. TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online, wherever you may be, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock, and we have no idea where Ezra Ginsberg is.
Actually, we have quite an idea. He's been in Montreal since yesterday, messaging us within probably every 5 minutes, advising us of what he's doing, such as, Richie, I'm eating a muffin right now. And then he sent me a picture of the muffin.
Yesterday he tweeted out, you know, and if you do miss Ezra, as he won't obviously be with us today in the studio, if you do miss him, you can follow him on Twitter, at ICEzzyG, and yes. You can see a picture of the bacon-stuffed brownie he ate last night.
That's made up, right?
Swear to God.
Are you serious?
Bacon-stuffed brownie.
I don't know. He was talking about our friend Jonathan, and he goes, Jonathan's license plate is Jets. And I messaged him, like, is that really your license plate? He says, I don't have a car.
That's about right. Anyways, Ezzy will not be here. The voice you just heard is Michael Remus. He's going to be sitting in, and he's also going to be doing his usual tweeting work. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Jam-packed show for you this afternoon. Coming up in about 30 minutes' time from the Washington Post and ESPN, Neil Greenberg is going to join us. Neil covers the Capitals, got some great insight into what's going on in the U.S. nation's capital. The Jets play at the Capitals on Thursday night, so we figured what better time to bring Neil on. Coming up a little bit after that from the Montreal Gazette, Pat Hickey is going to join us. Obviously, Jets-Habs game tomorrow afternoon, the traditional Canadians afternoon game on the day of the Super Bowl. So Pat Hickey is going to join us later on. And in the last hour, Jonas Siegel from TSN 1050 in Toronto is going to join us, talk a little bit about the Leafs. Let's get started by talking about last night's Jets-Panthers game. If there's been one must-win game this year, mm-hmm. that was the game the Jets had to win, and they came up on the short end of a 2-1 defeat, and it really just goes to show you that it's really hard to win consistently in the NHL when you can only score one goal a game.
Yeah, when you can only score one goal, Drew, that's exactly right. Claude Noel, in the post-game comments, he was a little bit frustrated. He seemed to blame the game on the first period. I'm not so sure I agree. The goal against was actually, I thought, a poor goal by Chris Mason. It was a low left side slap shot, a nice passing play on the power play, but Versteeg shot the puck low. It wasn't a hard shot to save, and Mason didn't make the save. The Jets weren't very good in the first, but Florida wasn't that good either. It's a matter of they can't score.
Florida took the play to the Jets for that first period, certainly, and really for the Jets to only be down 1-0 after that first period, they were right in that game. I mean, they were right in that game, and obviously they tied it up in the second period on that Brian Little goal, but we were talking off air or earlier in discussing the game. Besides that one goal, did they have really many other terrific scoring chances the entire game?
The Jets, not really. I mean, Blake Wheeler breaking the stick there obviously was a scoring chance they didn't take advantage of. Overall, Drew, you have a team exactly that can score. And you know, people like to look at this team in a vacuum and say, oh, if we do this and do this and do this, things will happen. This team isn't very good. I mean, we've said this throughout the year. This team isn't very good. The other spurts where they play successful hockey. But also, Drew, the point is this. It's not a very talented roster. So Claude Noel is playing the team. This team is employing a system that is based upon the talent level, which is defense first, try and get offense on the transition, then sustain pressure when you possibly can, and hope for some offense from your back end.
Yeah.
And when they don't get that, which is fairly regularly, they don't score a lot of goals. You can't have it both ways. And you don't blame Noel. I mean, they can't score, but Noel knew that, and that's why he's changed. That's why he's, if you watch the team and the evolution of the team since the beginning of the season, the team has changed significantly in the style of play.
Yeah, they're a lot less entertaining to watch.
It's very boring hockey. Because that's the NHL. The NHL is pretty boring.
And it's the only way they could be successful is to really clamp down and play this, you know, defense-first style of game. And, I mean, the number of teams that aren't playing that defense style of game are very few and far between. I mean, so it's...
The talent on the ice last night was lackluster at best. Both teams are middling NHL teams that are in a poor division and have a chance to possibly win the division.
That's right.
Because Washington more talent, and as we'll talk to Neil Greenberg about that, hasn't reached levels that they probably should.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what it boils down to, is exactly. It was an important game for two teams that ultimately really don't have any hope of making any impact throughout the rest of the, throughout the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, and the back-to-back nature, I mean, Remus, you can get on this too, the back-to-back nature, back-to-back from Tampa to Florida.
It's for not
the,
a hard
how, hour 40, or 45 minutes or an hour flight in probably getting in, probably 12 at night.
Do they even fly? Would they even fly from...
I don't even know.
I mean, would they fly from Tampa to Miami?
In any event. I mean, you're in Miami, relax the next... That's no excuse at all.
No. Back-to-back has nothing to do with it. They played the quote-unquote best of their in their back-to-back games last night. But if you're going to win in one of those games, I mean, if you can't get offense against Florida, which is not a dynamite defensive team, it just goes to show you this team is not offensively talented enough to compete on a night-in, night-out basis.
Look, it's back-to-back, and then a third game in four nights. You could see at the end of the game that these guys were, tired. Maybe the energy level wasn't there at the end, especially, with Bufflin, who was such a force in the earlier game against Tampa. And then last game, you could see he could barely skate on an icing.
By the way, and I like Dustin Bufflin. I've talked him up many times in the show, but Dustin Bufflin looks like, in my opinion, like he's put on 10, 15 pounds since he got injured.
It's hard to say. I mean, we don't want to speculate on that.
Well, I'm just telling my opinion. Certain guys are whatever they are, and you just take them for what they are. I understand that, to a point. But Dustin Bufflin looks, I know his knee injury, but looks painfully
gassed
right now.
And
I know there's certain parts of this you can control, okay? And when he's got the puck on his stick, he looks great. Because you can't get it off him, and he gets moving, and he's hard to stop. But dude needs to get a little more in shape.
Well, I mean, if he wants to harness all of his talents and be the best player that he can be, he needs to spend the offseason getting into the best shape of his career. I don't think anybody would argue with that. And, I mean, it's by the end of the game yesterday, when they were putting on that pressure, when they pulled the goalie, and you're right, they had the icing, and he was gassed going up and down the ice there.
It cost him a few seconds at the end there.
It certainly cost him a few seconds. It's hard to say, though, if that is... I mean, look, it's a combination of factors. One, he is probably a little bit overweight.
Well, not probably.
And two, there is something to be said for, not being in... When you don't play for a month, you're not in game shape. But you're shaking your head. You don't buy that?
No, I'm not. There's a part of that is game shape, and the part of that is gaining weight while not playing, which I think is fairly evident to the naked eye.
I'll say that when he came back against Tampa, having him on the ice,
no question.
We're a changed team. I mean, he's such an intimidating force. I mean,
100%.
When Kabina was cross-checking Ladd in the back of the head, who comes in there? Dustin Bufflin. And people are going to back off. He's one of the few guys on the team who will throw a body check.
Remus. And his transition game ability to move the transition game is unbelievable. The puck on the stick, you can't get it off. He creates offense from the back end. He was the reason for that overtime goal.
His cross-ice pass to Wheeler.
Wheel pass to Blake Wheeler. When he has a puck on his stick, he has a presence too. When he has a puck on his stick, he's looking dominant right now. He really looks great. But guy needs to get in shape. He can't be gaining that kind of weight when he's not on the team. He's injured.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't want to speculate on that.
Just give me my opinion.
That's fine. Your opinion is more than valid. But, I mean, you look at last night, and you look at last night going forward. We haven't heard anything about Evander Kane's status in a while now, so you have to assume he's not coming back. It's not in the imminent future. You haven't heard of he's skating or anything along those lines.
No, they said him and Tim Stapleton skated at MTS the other day, but he doesn't have any timetable.
Well, so with no time frame in place, this is your lineup. This is your roster going forward. And it seems, I mean, they haven't scored more than one goal in how many games now? I mean, not counting the overtime winner against Tampa. I mean, you go through the goals. One goal last night, one regulation goal against Tampa.
I must say though, I mean,
one goal against Philly.
Yeah, they can't score, Drew.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say though that the three games they've played, they maybe you could argue should have won all three.
Fine.
I'm talking about actual play on the ice. Should have won all three.
That's fine. They should have. But if you can't score, I mean, they played probably to an even level with Florida, and that the winning goal could have gone to either side.
But they outplayed Tampa.
Yeah.
I thought Philly was more of a little bit of a coin flip, too. You could argue that they outplayed them. They've played well with what they have. They just don't have enough. And, I mean, Claude Noel, you can't fault him. He's got a defensive system. Every coach does that now. They have a defensive system because they don't have enough offense.
Right.
And they take their chances in coin flip games. And right now, the Jets were winning them in December. They're starting to lose them now. I mean, this team isn't great.
That's right. I mean,
they're playing hard.
Yeah,
they play hard. I mean, they're playing hard for Noel. I think they play the system pretty well. They really, really become really good system team. Pavlik's looking good, but I mean, you can only do so much with the talent level that you have.
Well, when you lose a 2-1 game, when you lose a 2-1 contest like they did last night, where, like you said, it is a coin flip. You know, if Wheeler's stick doesn't break, yeah, or you know, one of the shots from the point gets in, or you know, they don't lose track of who was it in front of the net who scored the winning goal?
Versteeg?
No.
Oh, you're talking about
last Notch? Night.
Bergenheim.
If they don't lose track of Bergenheim,
and then,
exactly.
But Buffalo made a poor play on that.
Yeah, but I mean,
and Little did too. I mean, those were the two guys at fault there.
Right.
I actually was kind of shocked at that play. You had three guys surrounding him, like a triangle. You got the two defense down low, and then Little behind him. Yep.
Well,
how the puck squeaked through there.
And Buffalo was not square to him, right? He was kind of standing sideways. Looked like he was gassed. I don't know what time the shift it was. He looked like he was kind of standing sideways. He wasn't square to him. And Little was late to the guy in front, and that's what happens. I mean, Mason's generally not going to say that. Who will? I mean, that's...
It's not Mason's fault.
Anybody who's playing in the NHL, for the most part, that has a point-blank shot from the 3 feet in front of the net is going to score, oftentimes. But you're right.
And the decision to play Mason was the right decision and after.
You have to play Mason in that situation. I mean, he's been very good for you all year. Nobody's blaming Chris Mason for last night. I mean, granted that, you know, that first shot, he probably would like to have it back. But, you know, it's a power play, so you can't really...
It's one bad goal, sure, but if it's you're going to go into the game and say Mason will give you, let in two goals, you'll take it.
Well, but the problem is with these Jets is that they can't score three. I mean, I tweeted it out after Florida made it 2-1. I said, you know, this team's going to have to turn into an offensive juggernaut if they want to win this game.
Let's bring it up, guys, in this room. Everybody likes to complain. Evander Kane doesn't do this. Evander Kane doesn't do that. I'll tell you what he does do.
Score.
Scores.
Yeah.
I know he went through a drought in scoring, but that puck's going the right direction when he's on the ice for the most part.
I'll tell you what, as well as Blake Wheeler has looked as of late, and he's looked very good. He's been the
very
best
good.
Forward.
Very good.
You put Blake Wheeler playing at that level with Evander Kane on the ice at the same time, this team scores more than one goal a game.
I agree.
I mean, and you know, and to Blake Wheeler's credit, he seems to be rounding into form, he looks like a good power forward right now, one of the, as well as he has looked all year for sure, and probably in his entire career to some extent.
Oh, he's never looked better than this right now.
That's right. Yeah. And so if Evander Kane is flanking him on the left wing there, mm-hmm. That's back to being a dangerous line. So, yeah, for all the slings and arrows that are shot Evander Kane's way, that's what the team is missing. I mean, you don't get 40 goal scorers.
There's a lot of things in this game that you can mold players to do. You can mold them to be, you know, to a certain extent, shot blockers, getting into the lane, be a defensive player. It's very difficult. Well, it's basically impossible to mold somebody into being a goal scorer. You're either a goal scorer or you're not. Yeah. And it's hard. It's the hardest thing in the game to teach. That and obviously the hockey sense aspect of it, but I mean these things don't grow in trees.
No, you can teach it. You can implement a defensive system. Right. You can't implement a goal scoring system. Otherwise, everybody would be implementing that. It's just have it or you don't.
As a fan, people are going to get frustrated, and you're out, and you hear people complain about this person, that person. To be honest, this team is. I mean, there's a couple guys who aren't pulling their weight, and we'll talk about it next segment. I mean, at some point in time, you have to stop giving Eric Fair opportunities.
And they have been. They've been starting him up on the second line, and he gradually ends up on the fourth line by the end of the game. That's two straight nights that's happened.
I mean, you have to stop giving these guys consistent opportunities when they're really not doing anything with it. Maybe you pull in other guys and give them a little more opportunities, or maybe you switch some stuff around. Maybe you think about, you know, logging Bufflin on 2 minutes on the PP, something you want to get some more, create some more offense and things like that. I don't know, but I mean,
I want to let's go to break and I want to talk about the power play because the Jets' power play has been atrocious over the last four or five games, and I think probably all part and parcel with everything else. But that power play hasn't scored a goal in about 4 games.
You know what, Drew? Consistent. We're going to talk about it. We'll talk about it after.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked. Well done. Could go for a pizza. I haven't had pizza in about a week or 10 days, which is a long time for me.
Well, I had a great pizza last night. I was at a birthday party. There was some pizza, chicken fingers, meat lovers. A little bit much meat, but...
Meat lovers, why not?
Knee lovers, why not? There you go.
Sounds reasonable. Richard, you were off air. Have a... it's your weekly rant.
Let me quickly...
It's your weekly rant.
Okay, let me get my rant out of the way first. I mean, you know, sometimes you'll hear a player plays because of, you need to make a player earn it. And I think the coaches need to play that. You know, some players need to earn it, quote-unquote. Some players don't.
Earn their minutes, earn their role. Minutes. Yeah.
I mean, I actually like the Eric Fehr acquisition. I thought it was a low-risk move to try and get the guy here, okay? Eric Fehr's got to stop getting as much ice time as he's getting. He's played about 9 minutes a game, but if I look at his past, you know, five, six games, 9 minutes, 12 minutes, 16 minutes, 9 minutes, 7 minutes, 9 minutes, 8 minutes, 10 minutes. He's played 29 games, Drew. He has one goal and one assist. I know there's some percentages that are going to go his way eventually, but at some point, you have to combat that and say, okay, he's not getting it done. Give somebody else an opportunity.
Well, when you say that the percentages are eventually going to go his way...
I mean, you can't shoot how he's been shooting, Drew. I mean, you can't...
Well, but that's my point. Like, I mean, you think about all the games he's played as of late, and you talk about the percentages, and how I'm sure his shot percentage is way low right now. How many great scoring opportunities has he had that he's missed? Because I can't think of any.
That Antropov pass the other day, right? The beautiful pass by Antropov across the ice, and Fehr missed it. No, that's a missed shot. I mean, the guy's shooting 2.2%, Drew. His career, he's shooting 9%. So... I know his shoulders are not as what they once were, but he's not going to shoot 2% for the rest of the year. Having said that, at some point, if you're on this team, you have to be thinking to yourself, like, this guy keeps getting a lot of ice time. He's got one goal and one assist in 29 games, and that's appalling.
Well,
and you're starting him off a lot of these games on the second line. Go ahead, Rim.
I was going to say, like, you say give someone else a chance, but who else do they have? Who else is on the team?
Load up other guys. I mean, Bernie Straub was hurt before. Load him up with a little more ice time. Play a guy like Spencer Mahacek. I don't know. But give somebody else a shot here. Pull Cormier up and give him some minutes. I mean, you're logging Aaron Gagne for 8-9 minutes. I mean, there's got to be some other guys here that can give you something different. I just feel like everything is the same. I mean, on Timi Etnin. Again, don't mind that acquisition. Hasn't done anything. I mean, a guy like Patrice Cormier, say what you will, I think we can agree in this room. Gets it on the forecheck. He's physical. He adds a different dimension to the team.
When
he's not a guy who's a quasi-scorer who's not scoring. I mean, guys like Mietten, these guys can do some things, Mietten and Fehr, but they're not top goal scorers. They're not really quote-unquote checkers that Mietten kind of can be. So get some other element into your game. Get a little bit of sandpaper. Get something. How many guys can you have here who are getting 2 goals a year playing consistent minutes like this?
You're saying with a guy like Fehr, if he's not scoring, he's not really doing anything for the team.
That's right, he's not.
Whereas a guy like Cormier, you wouldn't expect him to score, but you know he's going to put in a...
When some face-offs, forecheck,
hit somebody.
Physical. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, I think, honestly, from what I've... And he's not some kind of superstar, but from what I've seen from him, I don't know if you guys agree, when he's played, I thought he's played quite effectively.
I thought Cormier came up here, won every face-off, played a pretty physical style, which I think this team is lacking in good
news.
Absolutely. And I thought he looked pretty effective out there, but for some reason they haven't really continued with him.
Well, you know, when you boil it all down, I mean, look, if they're not scoring, you want to at least be hard to play against. And Eric Fehr is not hard to play against for an opponent. I mean, he's not making an opponent's job any more difficult in their own zone. He's not forechecking, he's not, you know, causing chaos, he's not doing anything. I agree with you, a guy like Cormier, if he was up, he certainly wouldn't be backing down. He'd be hitting everything that he had a chance to hit.
Just a different element. I mean, something different. I mean, there's a lot of passengers here right now.
Sure. I mean, and we've talked about that. I mean, you know, with Eric Fehr at this point in time, they didn't give up anything to get him.
Drew, both moves, I don't mind.
I agree.
I'm just saying it's.
But at some point, change the move. Give up on the experiments to some extent.
Change it up a bit.
So next game, would you bench Fehr for someone like Spencer Mahacek and throw him on the second line?
Maybe. Yeah.
Well, no, I'd throw Burmistrov on that second line.
Yeah, log him and play him a little bit more. Yeah, play him big minutes.
Obviously, Noel trusts
Burmistrov. I like Burmistrov and Andropov. I've liked it all. I mean, when you see it in small samples, I like that combination. If you want to put Burmistrov, Andropov, and Wellwood, go ahead and do that. If you want to do something, you know, just change it up. I mean, Eric Fehr is the only guy I know who gets promoted by not scoring.
It's a fair comment. I mean, especially, they seem to trust Burmistrov. Noel seems to trust Burmistrov because he plays a lot of penalty kill time.
He's good defensively. We say that all year. Again, you got to see what you got here. This team isn't very good.
Right.
And don't get me wrong. They've played well. But overall, in the big scheme of things, they're not great. Okay? So that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's the truth.
I mean,
so might as well see what you got.
What's happened the last couple games, and Brian Engblom mentioned it on the TSN Jets broadcast, is Fehr started the game up on the second line for reasons not perfectly clear of. But by the end of the game, Burmistrov has replaced him on that second line. Mm-hmm. So if that seems to be the pattern, either one of two things is happening. That's the plan all along, which doesn't really make any sense why you would do that. Or Fair is disappointing Coach Noel with his play each and every game, and Burmistrov's replacing him. So it goes back to your original point. Why don't you try Burmistrov up there for an entire 60 minutes of action?
You can have your issues with Burmistrov and whether he tries to do too much, and I acknowledge those things. But you can't tell me that Eric Ferret's earned it over him.
No, and Burmistrov, especially, if for a coach like Coach Noel in this, and a team that's preaching a defensive system first, if you're defensively responsible, mm-hmm. as Burmistrov is, getting more second-line minutes, more power play time would be a reward for being responsible in your own zone to begin with.
True, it's a youngster too, right? Fair, you know what you got now. You know what he is. I mean, get the youngster some ice time. I mean, you're a team that, in the big scheme of things, you talk about the playoffs. But the playoffs are very far odds, okay?
Yeah.
So what do you got, and what do you got moving forward? And you got to evaluate.
Especially when we talked about Eric Fair last week, who's RFA after the season, if I'm not mistaken, right?
For cheap, because he hasn't played in.
They're not going to qualify. They can't qualify him. We discussed that, because, they have to qualify him at $2.2 million. So you let him walk if he wants, or you try and re-sign him for even less. But with Burmistrov, like you said, he's going to be on this team for years to come, and he's been impressive defensively. When he's had the puck in the offensive zone, he's shown flashes, at least of being able to, he might make one too many moves, but at least he has those moves to make. Whereas most of those other guys don't even have the moves.
Also,
I mean,
true.
Eric Fair.
Also true.
If he gets the puck, it puts him on a stick. He tries to shoot, but his success rate has obviously been woeful at that point this year.
I'll say when Burmistrov had the puck, especially at the beginning of the year in some of those games, like the Pittsburgh game or some of the December games, when he gets the puck, people in the MTS Center stand up and you wonder, what's this guy about to do? He can definitely create plays and make things happen. But when you put him with, and you've been saying this all along, when you put him with fourth line guys.
But yesterday with Aaron, starting the game with Aaron Gagnon and who's on the other right? Mietnin. So what do you expect him to do?
Yeah.
On the left wing too. What do you expect him to do? You're right, Rim.
And that's why, and yet he's finishing the game on the second line. So, but I don't know why the hesitation to start him on the second line. That's the part that I can't wrap my head around. Put them up there. Ladd, Little, Wheeler have been playing, since Kane has been out. They've been okay as a top line, quote-unquote top line.
Yeah, they've been playing pretty well.
Antropov and Burmistrov had some nice chemistry at the beginning of the year. We know those two get along. Burmistrov used to live with Antropov. What's the harm? What's the downside in trying there? That line right now, with Fair and Wellwood, it's too easy to play against. There's no forecheck consistently there. Because nobody's going into those corners. Fair, because he's worried about his shoulders. Wellwood, because any contact and he shies away from it. It's too easy, Unless it's a tic-tac-toe passing play, mm-hmm. that line's not generating any offense whatsoever because there's nobody to mm-hmm. force a turnover on an opponent.
Also, the thing with, Antropov and Fair, those are two pretty big guys who really aren't fast skaters. Throw Burmistrov in there, gets a little speed.
Absolutely.
Burmistrov's not a great skater, but he's better than...
He's a good skater.
Well, his skating's improved, though. I thought he was struggling a little bit at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think he's a...
He's better... Look, he's obviously faster than Antropov or Wellwood or Fair in that line.
Yeah, he certainly adds this element of speed. I like the way he skates. Drew, Remus's point is exactly right, though. I mean, Fair and Antropov is a line that moves...
Well, never mind Wellwood,
and Wellwood is, exactly. So it's not a speedy line. We've talked about the concern with the lack of speed on a line because then you can't create as much. And then what happens is, you just mentioned it, Drew, you're relying on tic-tac-toe passing plays, which happen once in a while. But with the way the NHL plays these days, getting in passing lanes and getting in shooting lanes, it's very difficult to make the passing plays.
Most goals come...
And Wellwood usually relies on the back pass of the trailer, which is a defenseman. Generally, the Jets have offensively proficient defensemen.
Yeah.
If he's not on a five-man unit with an offensively proficient defenseman, it makes it more difficult for that line to do something.
It just doesn't... I mean, for a team that's desperate to score, ride your horses. It's been our mantra for the last number of weeks. Ride your best players.
Also a good point, Drew.
That's why you have your best players. That's why they should be playing 25, 26, 27 minutes a game.
Absolutely.
What do you have to lose? What Eric Fair brings.
It's also a good point, Drew. I mean, if you kind of have these veterans throughout the lineup and you're not going to ride the young guys, I have no issue with you logging big-time minutes on your best players.
That's just it. I mean, that's why they're
especially
there.
When they're younger players. I mean, the guys like Wheeler and all these guys are under 30. So, you can log them some minutes. I mean, Tampa Bay logs big minutes on their best players.
Because they're your best players. I mean, this isn't socialism or anything where everybody gets to play the same amount.
The truth of the matter is essentially their playoffs the next 10 games or so, right? So, I mean, if they know they're not really going to make it and they can't make it through this next 10 games, then you can cut down the minutes after. But the playoffs are not going to be in April for this team. I mean, they might make it, and they have to win the division really to do that. But the playoffs start now.
That's right.
And that's what Gary Bettman wants, right? The three-point game, and Eric DeHatch wrote a great article about it this morning, I guess it came out, about that the three-point game skews everything because some games are worth 2 points, some games are worth 3 points, and that Gary Bettman will never get rid of it. And we've talked about this on the show only because he likes the idea, quote-unquote, of parity when it's not really there in reality.
Well, I mean, there's no parity because you look at Chicago-Vancouver that played earlier this week. You watch that level of hockey versus the level of hockey we saw last night.
We can talk about that game later because that was one of the best games I've seen. First of all, beautiful hockey.
Well, that's just
beautiful
it.
Beautiful hockey. You're talking skill. You're talking one-on-one plays. You're talking speed, good hitting, few penalties.
That's how hockey, that's the upper echelon of the NHL, and it's something that we haven't seen.
If you missed that on TSN on Tuesday, you missed out because it went overtime, 3-2 Vancouver win, worth every minute of, you know, I stayed up to what, quarter to 12 to watch that game?
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, and you look at that, those teams against the Jets, and they're playing a different game. They're not playing the same game. And that's really what it boils down to.
Well, that's the whole point, Drew, is that you get watching these games in a vacuum, you see team by team go through, and you have to realize, okay, look at the teams and look how stacked these teams are. Line after line after line is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, you're logging lines with Taves and Kane and Hossa and Boland and Keith and Seabrook, and just the Jets are so far from that. And that's not to paint the Jets in a negative light. That's just a point of fact.
That's just a reality of the NHL for everybody but top five teams, really.
Yeah, top five, ten teams.
And that's just what it boils down to. Anyways, let's leave it there. When we come back on the other side, Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post and ESPN is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show shortly after 12:30 in the afternoon.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And let's welcome back to the program from the Washington Post and ESPN, Neil Greenberg. Neil, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Our pleasure. Just get you on right up before the Habs and the Capitals puck drop at Bell Center tonight.
Yeah, it's an important game for the Caps, for sure.
Well, anytime you can, those teams that are behind the Caps, behind the Jets in the standings, as Montreal is, you have to beat up on them, and we'll talk about Alex Ovechkin in a couple minutes as he gets back to his return. But let's start really with the, as you referred to it on Twitter, the South East Division. If it wasn't for the Caps playing in the South East, you know, where would the Caps be this year, you know?
Oh, it would be an absolute disaster, I think. You know, when you're looking at the expectations for this team, I know that they were cup favorites in a lot of hockey publications. You know, this team they hadn't been able to get it together, which caused Bruce Boudreau to be fired, and it has gone downhill since Hunter has been brought on board.
Neil, Alex Semin, he's always, he's a talking point, certainly for Capitals fans. You would know that better than we would. You chart the scoring chances of the team, both for and against, and every player's on the ice. He's actually checking the numbers this morning. He's actually checking out quite well compared to the last. So we could, you know, look at that from whatever angle we want to. You know, what is this? First of all, do you think he's going to make it through the trade deadline? And is he playing better than some of the other players on the team this year? Like, how has he been?
Well, I think he's been playing okay. I mean, you know, whenever you have a team that struggled to tilt the ice in their favor and you see a guy like Alex Semin, who is about a plus 20 in the scoring chance differential, meaning at even strength he's been on the ice for way more scoring chances than he has been against, you know, that's a good sign. You know, there was some questions as to where he fit in the Dale Hunter system early on, and then he really started to rack up the points. You know, he needs a center that's able to help him generate some offense. I don't necessarily think that Marcus Johansson is that type of center. So, you know, he also gets paid $6.7 million, so he should be able to drive the offense himself. But I guess that's a discussion for a different day. As far as if he's going to be on the team, you know, a lot of the moves that the Capitals will or will not make are going to come down to the health of Nicklas Backstrom. He's only skated 5 minutes since he was elbowed by Rene Bork, that put him out. So, you know, until there's a better handhold on what his season's going to be like, I don't know if the Caps can really push all their chips in on this season and make a trade. Mm-hmm. So my guess is that he's going to be with the team for the rest of the season.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post and ESPN. Neil, Alex Ovechkin, we mentioned him earlier off the top. He comes back from suspension tonight for the first start this afternoon, rather, against Montreal. You know, is he the straw that stirs the drink in Washington, or is it really Nicklas Backstrom nowadays?
I think lately it's definitely been Nicklas Backstrom, especially on the power play. The power play has been absolutely lost since Backstrom went down to injury, and the shots for and against have become completely lopsided in his absence. I mean, it was bad when Hunter took over and got his system implemented, but ever since Backstrom's been out of lineup, it's been terrible. So I definitely think that he is the guy. He's definitely, in my opinion, the most valuable player on the Caps team. And, you know, I think we're seeing that more and more in the NHL. I think, you know, teams really do rely on their centermen to set up plays and to generate scoring. And, you know, the Caps really are no different in that regard.
Neil, Mike Green obviously is an important part of the Caps for many years now. He's come upon injury after injury now, obviously the bad groin. Can you talk about his status, when the team's possibly expecting him back, and what that could mean for the team moving, you know, down the stretch?
Sure. He just skated in full pads for the first time the other day. He's on track for his rehab, which puts him back in available for a game in a couple weeks. It's a tricky situation because you mentioned the injuries. He's also a restricted free agent at the end of the year, and the qualifying offer is going to be $5 million. So it really is an interesting situation that he's in, because $5 million for a question mark is a lot of cap space to allocate. So it'd be interesting to see what the team does with him going forward.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock, and we're talking to Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post and ESPN. Neil, the team made the big move, you know, they can say, when they fired Bruce Boudreau a number of months ago and hired Dale Hunter. Has there been really any net benefit to that move?
Not that I've seen. You know, the system that he plays a man-to-man defensive system, and a lot of everything starts in the back end. So what we're seeing now is especially the two youngsters, Carl Alsner and John Carlson, really struggle in the system, and the team is really struggling to generate positions with the puck, which is why, as you mentioned earlier, when you look at the scoring chances for the individual players, most of them are negative. Mm-hmm. And yep. They just have not been able to generate possessions with the puck, and it's been really difficult for them to scratch together wins. You mentioned earlier, you know, if you can't score, you have to be tough to play against. Well, if you're not generating shots, you need to be tough to play against, and the Caps just aren't doing that. And they haven't topped 30 or more shots just once in the past 11 games, and they just have not been able to generate any sort of attack time with the puck when they do have it.
Goaltending, Neil, obviously the team brought in Thomas Vokoun. The goaltending depth in the organization is considered quite strong. Thomas Vokoun was brought in at a kind of a bargain deal. His numbers don't check out that poorly. Michael Neuvirth, on the other hand, led in a couple awful goals against Florida the other night. Where do you see that? You know, how do you see that sorting itself out?
Well, I think a lot of Neuvirth's troubles, I think, come from not playing all that often. He gets a start every now and then. I think he's a very good goaltender. I think he's the future of the franchise. I expect him to be the number one goaltender next year, and I think if he gets a steady diet of starts, he'll be fine. But the goaltending is really what saved this team, especially over the past 20 games or so. I mean, they've been really making up for the lack of shots generated, the lack of offense. But, you know, as we've seen, you can't bank on good goaltending for long stretches. And if you don't have a puck possession to fall back on, things can get ugly pretty quickly.
You know, another question we have to ask, Neil, you can talk a bit of a joke around the team. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Is it Joel Reklish?
Yeah, Reklish.
Can you give I don't know if people in Winnipeg are quite aware, can you give our listeners a little bit of the background on what exactly happened with this guy?
Well, Dale Hunter, the Capitals were faced with some road games. Dale Hunter felt that they needed to be a little more physical on the road, so they call up Joel Reklish, who is a career AHL enforcer. He leads the AHL in pims. He gets like 6.5 to 7 pims a night. And he was brought up first game, he skated about a minute and a half. second game, he skated about 2 minutes. And then they just sent him back down, back to Hershey yesterday when they called up Keith Acoin. So it was a head-scratcher around the league. You know, you'd figure a team that's been struggling to put shots on net would have called up Keith Acoin a little bit earlier, but they decided to bring up an AHL enforcer, and it was a head-scratcher to many of us.
Yeah, and it really is. And crazy to think that a guy even like Keith, coming into the season with the talent they have, to think a guy like Keith Acoin is going to be a difference maker too, must be worrisome for Caps fans. Leave you on this last one, Neil. The relationship, I'm interested in the relationship between Dale Hunter and George McPhee. Are they on the same accord? Do they speak regularly, or do you feel like there's a little bit maybe of a disconnect there?
No, I mean, I don't know too much about their personal relationship or what goes on. I mean, Dale Hunter is George McPhee's guy. When he was hired, mm-hmm. he said that you know, he's been wanting Dale Hunter to be the coach of this team for a while. Whenever there were rumblings that Boudreaux may lose his job, Dale Hunter was always one of the first names to be brought up. I think they are on the same page. I think what we're seeing is square pegs and round holes. I don't think that there's that Dale Hunter has the right players to fit this man-to-man system. And quite honestly, I'm not sure that the players even exist. I think it's a system that works well in juniors because of the disparity of talent. But I think, you know, once you get up to the NHL level, the cracks are really apparent.
Well, what does that say about, sorry, you mentioned, you know, square pegs, round holes. You know, what does that say about Dale Hunter as a coach if he's not willing to really adjust to the talent that he has on the team?
Or George McPhee bringing him in the middle of season when the team's built for Bruce Boudreaux.
Yeah.
You know, I think by all accounts, it hasn't been a good fit so far. When I look at players like John Carlson and Carl Alsner, who had a spectacular season last year, playing against tough competition, big minutes, mm-hmm. the whole nine yards. If they're struggling in this scheme, who can make it work? I mean, if they can't make the system work, who can? Yeah. That's been my question. And, you know, like I said, I think it's a system tailored for juniors. I don't quite think it's ready for the NHL level. And, you know, as far as your question, you know, I agree with you. Yes, I think he should have adapted the system to the players and not the other way around.
Interesting food for thought. We'll find out Thursday when the Jets visit the Capitals in Washington. Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post and ESPN, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Neil.
Thanks,
have
Neil.
A good Saturday. Enjoy the game. Let's
thanks.
Go to break. Neil Greenberg was joining us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. David is a lifelong Winnipegger who brings an intimate knowledge and tremendous passion for all things Winnipeg to all of his real estate dealings. Call David at 230-6129 for your real estate needs. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Programming note, special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show featuring myself and Paul Edmonds of Winnipeg Gold Eyes, the Gold Eyes play-by-play guy, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. till 12 noon, right before we turn it over to Rick Ralph for the Jets pregame show and then the Jets Habs. So that's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., a special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Remus, I believe you have Joel Reklish's stats as of late.
Yeah, if you're interested in Joel Reklish stats, I tweeted them from our account at Illegal Curve, but I'll also just say them here. He's played two games this season. First game, January 31st against Tampa Bay, 1 minute, 49 seconds, two shifts. That's like 50 seconds a shift, not bad. And the second game against Washington, 2 minutes and 37 seconds of ice time, that's four shifts. And, you know, when you look at a guy who's played seasons like this in the AHL...
Yeah, let's hear these seasons.
28 games, this is last year, 28 games, 132 penalty minutes, 1 point.
Wow.
And then 2 years ago...
He's almost as good as Eric Fair.
20 this
kidding,
is
I'm kidding.
I saw that one coming
I'm
from
kidding.
A mile away.
21 games... 138 penalty minutes, no points. And if you're in the AHL and you see a guy like this getting called up, I mean...
Yeah, you're wondering what they're doing in Washington.
Yeah.
Well, you're wondering what your chances.
That's true, exactly. So,
I think it's fair to say that was a reckless decision by Dale Hunter.
So you're not buying stock in Joel Reklish? Is that reckless? I get it now. That was good. That was absolutely pretty good.
It took you a while there.
Yeah, it was a little slow on the uptake there. That was pretty
Famous
good.
Famous got it right away.
Yeah.
I want to know. Famous take over this. Whole
I want to know when they're going to offer Joel Reklish Relish. Huh?
Hey.
See what I did there?
Cut his mic now.
Cut it up.
That was terrible.
Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is, of course, www.illegalcurve.com. We're going to spend the next couple segments going through the remainder of the Winnipeg Jets schedule.
We're going to play a bit of a game.
A bit of a game, exactly. We're going to call it win, lose, or toss up. At the beginning of the year, Coach Noel said that he thought 96 points would get you into the playoffs. Now, given how terrible the Southeast Division is, that's probably a couple points too many, but we're going to still use it as a base.
Okay.
So that's 96 points. The Jets currently have, here they are. The Jets currently have 54 points. They've played 53 games. They have 29 games remaining in which they need to get 42 points.
And that's what Noel said at the beginning of the year. With the division the way it is, it could very well be less.
Could be very well less. Yes. But let's say if they get to 96.
Because Washington is 56, Drew.
Right.
I don't know if any team in this division will put together that kind of a string. But just for interest's sake, we're going to.
Well, Florida's got 59 points. So, you know, that's 20.
Sorry, 59. But yeah. Even so, I don't know if I see it.
Anyways, for argument's sake, the Jets need 42 points, 42 more points in the next 29 games to get to the 96 point total.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much that's, you know, not accounting 3-point games, that's 21 wins in the next 29 games. Let's go through the remainder of the schedule for the Winnipeg Jets and see how many of these games we suspect they're actually going to win or lose or, as they say, toss up, in which case it can go either way. Start tomorrow against Montreal. Jets play at the Habs. Habs are on the second half of a back-to-back.
I think we agree it's a winnable game.
The Jets should win that game. Yeah. If you have any designs on really making a run at the playoffs, that is a winnable game for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
So we'll mark that game into the win column. Tuesday night, back at home, Maple Leafs at the Jets.
Winnable game.
It's a winnable game, but it could go either way.
I think we're putting Rios, what do you think? I think the win category.
I think for the purposes of this, assume that this is a playoff team. They should win this game.
You're 15-8 at home. You're playing a team that's 500 on the road. You're 4 points apart. They have a couple of games in hand. You've beat them at home before. I think that's a winnable game.
Okay. I'll defer to both of your wisdoms.
What we're basing on, Drew, is the games
games you should win versus games you should lose versus games that are can go either way. You know, fine. You should win that game. I'll grant you that, or I'll give that to you. Thursday night, Jets at Washington. Based on talent and talent alone, the Jets should not win that game.
I think it's a toss-up.
I think it's a toss-up too.
Okay.
No Backstrom. No Green.
They've played Washington tight a few times this season. They got a win here. I mean, it's in Washington, but I think they went to overtime.
Yeah, they did.
They took Washington. Shamara beat them in overtime.
And the other loss they had to Washington was when Ovechkin scored with like 5 seconds left in the first. They should have gone overtime that game too.
In the third, in the 45 seconds.
I mean, it's a winnable game, but you know we'll
put in the toss up.
We'll put in a toss up.
Okay, mark it down in the toss up column.
Next game
next
after that?
Saturday, 1:00 Winnipeg time. Goes early start for the Illegal Curve crew next Saturday, by the way. Programming note again there. An early start. Jets at Penguins.
Lost.
I think you'd say that's probably a pretty easy defeat.
Should be a defeat. Pittsburgh's a good team.
Yeah,
Pittsburgh. Really good team, and they're on the road. Yes, that's in the loss category.
Okay. No argument from anybody in this room over that one. Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. Islanders at the Jets.
I have a date with the Islanders. It's my only date right now. That's a win.
Should beat the Islanders.
Yep, absolutely.
They did lose to the Islanders on home ice.
They did not play well that game.
No, that was. But I mean, they had to really play poorly to lose that game. So we're all in agreement that they should beat the Islanders.
Absolutely.
Okay, there you go. That's put that into that column there. Next game is Thursday, February the 16th. The Jets at the Wild.
Toss up.
Wild obviously started well. Have been pretty abysmal since then.
You beat the Wild. They're not playing great. They're having trouble. Marek Zielicki with issues there. This team is a team that, you know, is not a very high scoring team. I think that's a complete toss up game. Reem?
I think you could put it as a win, but you know, toss up.
Yeah. I think more likely to be a toss up than anything.
Same. They're about the same.
Look, if it was at home, I would put it as a win, but it's on the road.
Yeah, I'd go with the toss up on that one.
What are we at right now so far, Reem?
We got so far six games. We got 3 wins and 2 toss-ups. And
next one.
So I think we're being a little optimistic.
No, I think we're going to be good so far. Keep going.
Okay. I think we're being optimistic, but I guess realistic if this team wants to get to where they want to go.
Yes.
Friday, February the 17th, second half of a back-to-back, back at home against the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, that's likely a loss.
I would say that's a loss. The odds of the Jets beating the Bruins twice on home ice is... Especially on the second half of back-to-back. I'm not sure. You know, I'm going to check.
Not much travel. It's a 45-minute flight, but...
Yeah, I know. But, you know, this...
Hey, a lot of teams come here after playing in Minnesota and...
Yeah. Well, they usually play in Chicago, though, oftentimes. It hasn't been Minnesota as often as it's been Chicago. And that's really what makes it... And that makes a difference. When it's a Chicago flight, that's a much longer flight.
Well, that's Chicago airport.
Boston is not on the second half of back-to-back. They'll be in Winnipeg rested. So I would mark that down as a loss.
Well, hopefully Tyler Seguin sets his alarm clock.
Exactly. You know, but you'll have more time to experience the Winnipeg nightlife or whatever.
Sure.
Sunday, February the 19th, the Colorado Avalanche at the Jets.
Win.
Should beat Colorado on home ice.
Yeah, home ice, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you
already beat them on the road.
Yeah, that was probably the most handy game that the Jets have played recently.
Yeah,
but Colorado's not very good. Sort of similar to the Jets in standings wise.
Next one.
Yeah. So they should beat the Colorado Avalanche. Tuesday, February 21st. This is in the midst of the Jets' 7-game homestand. The
schedule's pretty easy so far.
Pardon me, 9-game homestand by the looks of it. Flyers at the Jets.
I think the Jets are at home. They've played the Flyers tough. To me, that's a toss-up game.
Well, it depends on who. I mean, I think it depends largely on Philly's injury situation.
They beat them at home. They beat them 3 times this year.
Yeah,
I don't think it's a win. I think it's a toss-up game, though. Reem?
I would agree. I think, you know, normally I go into these games against top teams like the Flyers thinking that the Jets are going to get blown out. And they had that shootout game, 9-8. They won here in the...
I think 6-4 it was.
6-4 or something. And they won the other game. So, for whatever reason, they've been playing the Flyers tough.
Fine, we'll call it a toss-up.
Next one.
Lightning at the Jets, 2 days later.
If you're going to think you're going to go into it here, I mean, the Lightning haven't played well. To me, that's... A win.
Should beat the Lightning. Yeah. If you have designs on making the playoffs, absolutely. You have to beat the teams that are behind you in the standings.
Absolutely.
And especially at home ice.
Exactly.
They should beat the Lightning in that game. Saturday, February 25th, Blues at the Jets.
I think with the way St. Louis is playing.
You're tempted to say toss up and I understand why, but I think it should be a loss.
Oh, I was going to say loss.
I think I was going to say loss, too.
Well, there you go. So I would mark that down. I mean, St. Louis is still plugging along there. I mean, 30-13-7.
Yeah, I mean, right now, can you beat these guys? Especially a team that's that good defensively, guys. The Jets can't score. Tough.
Yeah, exactly. And the final game for February, and we'll take a break after this one. We'll recap it. Oilers at the Jets on the trade deadline day, Monday, February 27th.
Got to win it.
Yeah, you have to win it. I mean, the Oilers...
They're not a playoff team.
No. And that'll be a very interesting game.
Oilers might be shipping out veterans that day too.
Exactly right.
There's going to be a lot of Jets might as well, but
there's going to be a lot of the roster that comes into Winnipeg on Sunday will probably not be the roster that plays the game on Monday.
It's after the deadline.
That's
right. We're on that day. Remus, what's the recap before break?
Wait, so what are we doing for this Edmonton one? Toss
it's a win.
Up?
Win.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
We'll have the recap after the break.
Okay.
We'll
let you do a lot of math during the commercial break. When we come back, we'll start on March and then finish it up with April. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Queens?
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go, still to come. Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette. And Jonas Siegel from TSN 1050 in Toronto.
Again, to remind everybody that the Jets get to play tomorrow in the pre-Super Bowl game.
That's right.
Hockey
it's a traditional game the Habs play always Sunday afternoons before the Super Bowl. And a programming note, of course, we will be on the air, or I will be on the air, beginning at 10 a.m. with Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Goldeyes, on a special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. till 12 noon prior to Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show. I'm not sure. I think they're hustling. They're counting on Hustler being in jail tonight. Is that what they're doing? I'm not 100% sure what's going on.
I don't know about Hustler. I've been enjoying seeing his tweets from Indy. They're having a great time over there.
It sounds like Indy's an incredible party scene right now. They went to LMFAO last night.
I saw Gary tweeting about what he was going to wear at LMFAO.
Yeah.
Well, Drew, he should have asked you. You went to LMFAO.
It's true, I did. Yeah.
What did you wear?
I wore all my tie-dye.
I can't tell if this is real or not.
Well, I know Drew went to LMFAO. I'm not so sure if you wore a tie-dye,
But I didn't wear tie-dye. And for the record, I didn't pay to go see LMFAO either.
Drew wore a tie to LMFAO?
I thought it was a church group. It's not a church group. I misunderstood again, as usual. Let's continue on going through win, lose, or toss-up. Thursday, March 1st, Florida Panthers at the Winnipeg Jets.
Win.
They got to win one of these games against Florida.
Playing at home against Florida's not that good. I mean, they haven't beat them, but come on, that's a game you have to win.
If you want to be a playoff team, if you want to win that division,
no, Florida's no better than the Jets. I mean, no. They might be winning the game, so they're no better than the Jets.
Agreed with you that if the Jets want to be a playoff team, mm-hmm. they have to beat the Florida Panthers.
Look,
yeah.
It's pretty straightforward.
Those last two games against Florida, the one the other night, I guess last night, and the one that was here, they easily could have won both of those
definitely
games.
Definitely should have won the one in Winnipeg.
The one here, they should have won.
Yesterday was a coin flip.
Both these games were going into the mindset, you need to win this game, and they lost them both. So
It doesn't say much for the mindset.
Yeah.
Last game on the 9-game homestand that rounds up the end of February and the beginning of March, Buffalo at the Winnipeg Jets, and that's got to be a win.
Yeah.
You've beaten Buffalo. Well,
you beat them in Buffalo, and you beat them here.
Yeah. Didn't you lose? And they lost to Buffalo in overtime once right?
Early in the season, I think.
Yeah. At the end of that first long road trip.
Yes, that's right.
Derek Roy?
That was a crazy 6-5 game again, right?
Yeah, it was a really high-scoring game. Yeah. That was the game right after the New York trip.
Yes, that's right.
It was the Tuesday after Thursday.
So put that in another win, Reem. So that's what?
I think we got 14 games, 8 wins, 3 losses, 3 toss-ups.
All right, next one.
We're awfully optimistic. But
I mean this is an easy schedule.
A lot of teams that are behind the Jets in the standings here or at the same level.
Starts to get a little bit harder starting Thursday, March 8th. Jets at Canucks.
Loss.
Yeah. I mean, the talent disparity we talked about.
I did justify. That's a loss.
Yeah.
Next one.
Next day, second half of a back-to-back. Calgary, Jets-Calgary.
Second half of a back-to-back. The team's 0-9 with travel, and Calgary is a tough team, and I actually don't mind the way they're playing. I would say that's a loss.
I would agree with you.
Right?
I mean, there's been no evidence that the Jets are going to do anything but lose back-to-backs.
Just the fact that it's a back-to-back, you got to put it as a loss. And on the road.
Well, they have 5 days off almost. Dallas at the Jets on Wednesday, March the 14th.
Got to win that one.
Yeah. Have to win that game. You have to beat Dallas. I mean, where's Dallas this year? Right at the cusp of a playoff spot. You know what, similar spot to the Jets.
You know what? I like what they've done there, the Manitoban coach. But that's a game you got to win.
Friday, March the 16th, Capitals at the Jets.
I think you got to win. I mean, you can maybe argue toss-up. I'd say more toss-up again a little bit later in the season.
You figure Washington's going to at some point.
I don't like the team. I think Washington's extremely overrated if they're held in that high esteem anymore. But what do you think, Reem? I think it's more of a toss-up game, don't you?
We said the last one was a toss-up at Washington. This one's at home. I mean, It's hard to predict.
They beat us here once. They beat the Jets here once.
I think toss-up is probably fair.
Jets beat them here. Yeah.
I think toss-up is fair.
Okay.
Sunday, March the 18th, Carolina at the Jets.
You got to win that game.
You have to beat Carolina.
Boy, the schedule is easy. Holy smokes.
Carolina's been playing well, but you still have to beat them.
Yeah, you got to beat them. They've beat them 3 out of 4 so far? Or 4 to 5,
whatever
it is.
Yeah. I think they beat them twice on home ice, right? And once in Carolina, and they lost once in Carolina. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
So you have to, win that game. Tuesday, March 20th, Jets at Penguins. A loss. No reason for it to be anything but a loss.
Yeah.
Friday, March the 23rd, Jets at Capitals.
Let's toss that toss-up again.
Put it into a toss-up category as well.
Next one.
You staying with this here, Reem?
I'm keeping track, guys.
Okay, good. Second half of back-to-back, Jets go to Nashville. Saturday, March 24th.
It's a loss.
Yeah. Nashville, the way they play defensively.
Yeah, second half, back-to-back.
And they're a better team.
On the road, they're a better team.
Yeah. Sorry, that's at Nashville?
At Nashville. Yeah, Saturday, March 24th, that would be a loss.
Next.
Oh, sorry.
Monday, March 26th, Senators at the Jets.
Toss-up game to me.
No?
Toss-up game to me. I think that they have trouble with Ottawa's skill and speed there.
Yeah, they beat them last
beat
time,
them
though.
And then Ottawa beat them here.
Yeah, I'm fine with
Ottawa
the toss-up there.
Beat them in Ottawa the first time, so yeah, I'd say a toss-up.
Yeah.
Because of the home ice advantage. They're very similar teams.
Yeah.
In terms of output, I mean, the way that they're built overall, Ottawa's got an advantage, I think, for the future.
Wednesday, March 28th, Rangers at the Jets.
Well, that's a I think that's a loss. I mean, Rangers own them. I mean, what's the score been? And 2-1 they beat them. 2-1 they beat them here. Then they beat them 3-0 twice in MSG. So the Jets have scored one goal in three games against the Rangers. Two of those games are against Biron. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
you can't score, and the Rangers don't allow any goals.
That's right. So I mean, that's I'd mark that down in the loss category. Friday, March 30th, Jets at Hurricanes.
You got to win. I mean, the Hurricanes are pretty bad. Got to win.
If you want to make the playoffs, you got to win that one.
Yep.
I'm fine with that. Saturday, March 31st, Jets at Lightning, second half of a back-to-back.
Because it's travel, second half back-to-back on the road. I mean, I say loss, guys.
I say loss, but I'm kind of... I mean, they got to win one of these back-to-back games.
Why?
I mean,
you've never seen, you haven't
sure
seen
they do, but I mean, we're not going to say... We're not going to put them in the, even in the toss-up category if they haven't done it yet.
Yeah, when they do it, then we can go back and amend our toss-ups later. But
I got lost there.
I have lost there, too. I've seen no evidence to tell me that they shouldn't lose that game.
That's right.
Final markdown a loss.
Thank you.
Fair enough.
We're into April now, so the last three games of the regular season. Tuesday, April 3rd, Jets at Panthers.
Toss up to me.
Hard to see. I mean, by this point in time, by those end of the games, it's end of the season, last three games, you're going to have a pretty good idea how these games are going to matter in the playoffs.
Do we have any other Florida games there so far, Reem?
Yeah, I think we have two, I believe.
Yeah.
We got 13th game at home. We said it was a win.
Okay.
I think we had one more, didn't we?
I believe we did, but yeah.
In any event, I think toss up there in Florida on the road. Toss up.
No, I don't think we did.
No, that was just the right.
What do you guys think there?
Yeah.
Toss up. I mean, you can beat them. I mean, they could have gone. They could have won yesterday. It could have gone either way. But I'm fine with the toss up there. No argument really from my perspective. And then the final game, pardon me, no, Thursday, April 5th, Jets at Islanders. You should beat them. You should beat them.
Your games you should win if you want to make the playoffs. So, yeah, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't, and you can go back, if they don't make the playoffs and they lose to the Islanders, you can go back and
they
say,
already have once.
That's right. Well, we've lost that game. And you look back at the Montreal game. Well, they've lost to Montreal twice this year.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they all matter. You know, the first game of the season
has the same
number of points.
Right.
And I remember going back to October. The first game of the regular season, we said on air, you know, there's so much hype and everything, but it matters just the same, and it might matter even more back in at the end of April.
Let's finish her off.
Last game of the season, Saturday, April 7th, Lightning at the Jets.
What do you say?
I think you got to win it.
Yeah, okay. Rim? Yeah.
Yeah, win.
What's our total tally here? I think this is interesting.
I don't know, should we take a break?
Yeah, let's do an early break.
Am I hosting
the
show here?
Yeah. No, we're just letting you just guide it. Don't think. Don't get too ahead of yourself.
It really depends on how quick your math skills are, because if you're quick math skills, we could do it right now.
Yeah, but apparently your math skills aren't that quick.
If you guys want to keep talking, I can add these
up. It's okay. We'll go to break. We'll go to an early break. Try and do some simple math if you don't mind. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, where you've done some math. The accounting firm of PricewaterhouseCoopers has been in, you know, verifying the results. Remus has used all his fingers and toes and still managed to screw it up a little bit. You know,
I thought I did quite good.
You weren't here. You left the room.
Oh, what happened?
There were some troubles. He was telling us they had. He was let me put. Yeah, 29 games left, and he only counted up to 26, 27. I mean, there was some simple math. A little bit too late of a night there for you, there, young man.
No, this is what happened.
You have terrible handwriting. What?
I do. First of all, I do have terrible handwriting, and I was writing some of the games that were loss and toss instead of toss, and the L's and the T's kind of look alike. Is that plausible?
Not for anybody who really knows how to write. You know, it isn't plausible. An L and a T don't look anything
similar.
Let's
go to the results.
According to the tabulations that Michael has done, and the Jets have 29 games left. According to our prognostication skills, they should win 13 of those.
Well, if they want to have a chance to make the playoffs, these are the games they should win.
These are the games they should win. They should win 13 of those.
13 of them.
They should lose, quote-unquote, should lose 9 of them. And 7 games were toss-ups. So split the toss-ups in half and even give the Jets a benefit of the doubt. So say they're going to win 17, they should win 17 of their last 29, and they're going to have 17 wins and 12 losses. 17 wins equals another 34 points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we said that they needed another 42 points.
So that puts them up to 88.
Yeah.
So what you need there is you need Florida to get 29 points, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you need them to get 29 points, 28 points, really, in the next 32 games. Yeah.
It doesn't look good.
So when you look at it that way.
It doesn't look good.
Look at it that way.
Yeah. These are...
I thought we were being pretty optimistic.
I thought there were a lot of games that we gave them wins that could have easily gone to the...
Yeah, I just thought we were being fairly optimistic, and I don't mind that.
Or the games they lose need to be three-point games. True. If you're going to lose, I mean, they
absolutely true.
They have a very thin margin of error for clean losses.
Yes.
Conversely, right. In the games where they play against the Floridas or the Washingtons or the teams right around them in the standings, they need clean wins.
Totally agree.
They need to when they lose.
When you put it that way, though, you get them to about 88 to get them to 88 points. I think that's being fairly optimistic. 88 points. You need to hope that the team ahead of you.
88 points usually isn't going to count.
Doesn't get 29 points in
32 games with games in hand.
A point a game.
Yeah, with games in hand. I mean, it's...
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
It's not going to be... I mean, and that's, that's what Rick has been saying.
And that's, excuse me, Drew, but that's also taking Tampa Bay and kind of Washington out of the picture, too, right? Like, we're talking about Florida there, really, but there's other teams, too, that have to struggle. Remus?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a tough road for the Jets, but, I don't know, maybe some of these losses could end up as wins. Maybe they'll surprise us.
Wins could end up as losses.
Yeah, I mean, there's been no reason to think that... there's no guarantee that the Jets are going to be, able to win these so-called winning games. There's been plenty of games that they've lost on home ice where they shouldn't have had no business. You can't lose that game to Florida, more so than yesterday's game against Florida. Yeah. But the game against Florida on the Saturday night a couple weeks ago, where Florida was on the second half of a back-to-back. They played in Chicago the night before. They had that late start, remember, in Chicago?
Absolutely.
They flew into Winnipeg.
That was a must-win game.
They didn't get into Winnipeg till 3 a.m. or whatever. And then they lost that game on home ice in the shootout. It was really an inexcusable loss.
Well, I think it starts tomorrow, Drew, with the Habs. Got to beat the Habs.
Got to beat the Habs. I mean, the Habs are playing right now. Second half of back-to-back for the Habs. Yeah. I mean, you have to beat them. They're behind you in the standings. They're really playing out the string at this point. You look at their roster. This isn't a team that is going to make a run. Even if they make a run, they're probably too far back.
Oh, they're done. Yeah, they're done.
They're done. I mean, and we have Pat Hickey coming up in the next segment. And you'll hear from what Pat has to say about that. But if the Jets don't win, don't take care of business starting tomorrow.
You make the great point, though, that the taking care of business, Remus, I'll get in here in a second. The taking care of business is really contingent upon a number of things. Either teams around you struggling or playing about the same level, and it's a three-point game.
Those 3-point games, honestly, they just don't make any sense. They don't make any sense.
Well, they make sense because they keep everybody involved.
It's a fake involved. So so everybody can in March can say that they're in it, even though they're terrible. And that's what Gary Bettman wants. It's a fake parody. I mean, because he can't realize real parody, so he wants a fake parody.
That's exactly right. Because I mean, the real parody.
When another league gives points to teams that lose. Same points for a shootout win as a regulation win.
That's right.
The same points overtime win it's
just the fact that the games aren't equal. That one game can be worth 3 points.
Exactly right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Eric DeHatch, Globe and Mail, friend of this show, he writes his NHL notebook every week in the Saturday Globe, wrote on this, and it's on the website too, wrote about this. It's on globesports.com.
Yeah,
and he touches on the fact that it's exactly what Michael just said, and exactly what we were talking about earlier in the show. You can't have games that are worth 3 and games that are worth 2. Doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, it's not... You're right. But then again, it's the NHL, so I really can't say I'm surprised that it doesn't make sense.
And you know what? Yeah, Drew. I mean, you're just... When you don't have a three-point game in the regulation, you provide less of an incentive to score. And I'll tell you one thing. If you've been watching the NHL lately...
Nobody scores.
Because they have a point before they score.
That would require taking a modicum of risk, and most teams determine, hey, it's probably not worth it.
But
the benefit...
If
a regulation win was worth 3 points,
then the benefit
is huge.
I think a 3-point game in regulation, would increase scoring in the National Hockey
League. Being worth 3 points in regulation,
absolutely would increase scoring because the incentive is there to score. Right now, it's not there.
Right,
you take your chances.
That's right, and I mean especially
later in the season when you need 3 points, you're going to push for it.
That's right. How much risk reward is there? The reward is much greater. Right now, there's no risk-reward. And, I mean, it's funny that we're talking risk-reward on the same week that Jeff Reinbold returns to the CFL. But he was all about high-risk, high-reward as a defensive coordinator as a Bombers head coach. But that's it. If there's no reward there, why would you take the risk? It's pretty logical when you think about it. Hey, if I walk across this creaky bridge, there's $1 million on the other side for me. But, hey, there's only $25 on the other side. I'm going to stay on this side of the bridge.
It's a very fair point, Drew, because if you watch hockey right now, NHL, you're watching a lot of hockey. I mean, you hope the Jets do well for the city, for the organization, for everything. But you watch this team play. I mean, 2-1, 2-1. It's difficult because, again, there's no incentive for them to allow Dustin Byfuglien to push the pace to score a goal because the risk is so high.
That's right. So. I mean, it's funny, you know, this week, you know, four Jets games this week, the best of the four games has by far been the Tampa Bay game, I thought.
I agree. It was a fast-paced, low-scoring game.
That's right.
In stark contrast to yesterday's game.
I saw somebody on Twitter say something. I think there were only like six whistles in the first period of that Tampa Bay game.
Yeah, it was a great first period.
Yeah, I mean, that's a... And I mean,
I watched that game on tape, but like... One in the morning.
You had a family event.
Yeah, and it went
I
by.
Wasn't invited. That's okay, though. There's no animosity at all.
Well, Drew, actually, you're the only person I know who's actually older than my grandmother.
Yeah, your grandma. Happy 90th birthday to Bubba Toots, of course. You remember Bubba Toots from the episode of the show where she called in and said, who or what is a Gary Lawless?
And then Gary tweeted her happy birthday on Thursday and said that she was a Winnipeg icon.
That's true.
Man, the love for Bubba Toots on Twitter, unparalleled.
Yeah, there's a lot of love on for more than all of us combined. Bubba Toots got a lot of love.
Let's be honest. Knowing you guys, knowing myself, I'm not surprised more people would like Bubba Toots than they would like us.
That's true.
You know, we're fueled by hate. She's not. She's
fueled by hate.
She's fueled by love.
I was fueled by banana tort that night, though.
Yeah, good banana tort?
Oh, yeah.
That's good. I mean, you're right. I mean, the NHL, for the most part, it's dull. Because everybody, you know,
well, this is a more fundamental problem. And I want to get Eric on to talk about the article because I want to talk about it too at a more fundamental level is what comes from the rules as they are. And I think Gary Bettman has a lot of flaws in his tenure as commissioner. And the idea that he makes teams money, okay, sure, every league in sports is making money more than the NHL is. And furthermore, there's teams that don't want to, that they can't find an ownership for. And there's been a lot of mess. I don't know why the guy's still around when he's doing such a poor job. And that's another fundamental issue, is it's this fake parody. I think it hurts the quality of the games. And I think that the incentive, I watched Calgary-LA 2 weeks ago, there's like three scoring chances in the whole darn game. I mean, it's no offense, there's no speed, and it's an issue. And you know, I mean, well, let's get to that another day. Why don't we cut early and go to Hickey?
When we come back?
Yeah.
Worth noting, though, a couple games already underway, so we might as well do a score update. There are actually four afternoon games in Boston. Pittsburgh is up 1-0 on Boston right now. Now, that's a game. You watch Pittsburgh play Boston.
That's a game.
That's a game. That's a game. Hockey playing at a very high level.
Yep.
You know, those are talented teams.
Yeah.
In Philadelphia, Jersey is up 6-0 on Philadelphia halfway through the second period.
I like Jersey, not to a 6-0 extent. I've liked Jersey all year. I like what they're doing. They're more aggressive than they're given credit for. They have a nice top. They can get Zajac back in there. Henrik healthy.
Zajac's very iffy.
Yeah, but they think he's going to come back. And, you know, if you don't trade Parise, if they can get solid goaltending from Brodeur and Heron out, and that's a big if, they're a dangerous team. They have skill and speed. When you have Kovalchuk and Parise, you have guys like Henrik Eliash looking great. You know, you push some guys back down. Clarkson's had a good year. Solid defense.
Yeah.
Obviously, you need Adam Larson back, too. He got hurt, but... That's a team that I wouldn't want to necessarily play as a high seed in the playoffs. The
problem with Jersey, of course, going for next year, is they have such financial difficulties with their ownership, it's going to be hard to keep Parise on that team.
We'll be talking about that.
An off-season. That's a summer show sort of discussion,
absolutely.
I suspect.
Absolutely.
And Washington.
The Jets probably be interested in him.
Well, they should be.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's a UND guy.
UND guy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's... Minnesota boy, UND guy.
And tremendously talented. So if you want talented with ties to, with familial regional ties...
Pretty young.
Yeah, pretty young and talented. That's not a bad...
Canadian dad. I have people remember him, J.P. Parise from the 72 series.
Yeah.
Who was the one who fake swung the stick at the referee. Do you remember that?
I remember the famous clip. I mean, that was hockey at a whole other level.
We should talk about swinging sticks at referees, but we'll talk about that later on. Sorry, swinging sticks at your own coaches.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that later on. Yeah.
You think the Predators miss him?
I don't think anybody misses that guy.
I don't think so either. Anyways, much more to come. When we come back, you'll hear our interview with Pat Hickey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.